Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you, dear Kelly?
I'm so good.
So good. Well, I have a special announcement today. It is Kelly's birthday.
I do love my birthday. I'm like one of the few that like just loves, I'm like the birthday whore. I celebrated the week before, the week after, you know.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to spare our listeners, however, from my singing voice.
No,
so please, just know that I am wishing and singing you happy birthday.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
I have to share what your husband did over the weekend because it was so cool. So yeah. I get a phone call a couple days ago and Kelly's husband, David, calls me and he goes, I'm doing sort of like this weird thing, like this day-long surprise party for my wife. I'm like, what is a day-long surprise party? He says, well, I'm inviting all of her friends to come pop in at various times during the day before I take her out to this special thing. He goes, can you come really by, sweet. Please, please, please? So it was so cute. By the time I saw you, it was about 3 o'clock and you had been inundated with guests.
It was crazy. He started at 11, like his work friends and like people that I really like from his work. And then it was like sprinkle of some other people. Then like you had come by. And then that night he took me to a mystery dinner with a couple, like two other couples.
So did you solve it? Did you solve it?
Yes, I totally did. I didn't win because you had to have the most details, but I did know who it was, so that was kind of cool.
I just can imagine you would be so good at those kinds of things.
I love that kind of stuff. I love it. I'm going to an escape room this weekend again.
Oh, yes, because you're going off with some friends.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I'm super excited. But I have to tell you what happened this morning.
Of course you do.
This is so fun. Yeah, of course. What else? So my older son wakes me up probably 4 or 5 times last night. He was scared. He's in like a nightmare phase. So that was the birthday wake up. And then like my younger son's like, mommy. I'm thinking, oh, yes, he remembered, you know, happy birthday. No, he's like, mommy, I made a big fart in my room. Happy birthday to me as a mom of 2 young boys. This is like the life, you know. So that was just, yeah.
Oh, my
gosh. So that's the story.
Oh, my gosh. Did I tell you that Tiffany got a snake?
No.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
She got a snake. Yeah.
That's so cool. What kind?
Uh-oh. Oh. She told me what it was. I can't remember. It's the kind that likes to wrap around you, but it's not a boa.
Okay.
A viper?
That's pretty amazing.
Like, I know. Like buy but it was cool. It was not cared for well, so she got this snake off of Craigslist, and she's in the process of nourishing this snake back to health. So she has to feed it live mice, and she's helping it shed its skin. She put some of the special like aloe lotion on its skin so it would come off
really?
In one piece. Yeah, she keeps sending me pictures.
She's pretty amazing.
A character. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Other piece of news.
Tell me.
Our medical medium was correct. I have low thyroid.
Incredible.
Just as he said. So I went and got tested. So I'm going to see my doctor tomorrow. So hopefully that will help with some of the low energy.
Yes, exactly. And the sleep. That's pretty incredible. God, I can't get over that. So, well, this show is sponsored by our wonderful Kim Gold. She is the author of the business memoir Gold Standard, How to Rock the World and Run an Empire. This book is called A Front Row Seat to a Huge Upheaval, not only in her own life, but in American business as it comes to grips with the kind of woman who is here to change the game. Leah Remini says Kim's achievements in business will leave one in awe. That's a given. And Mark Burnett notes that Kim always takes action on her instinct and seems to win time and time again. Gold Standard by Kim Gold is available on Amazon.com now.
Yay, Kim. It was so nice to visit with her yesterday. She is such a trip. She's such an interesting lady.
So much
lady.
Fun. Yeah.
Really so last week we had a great guest, Maggie Knipe. Yes, K-N-E-I-P. And she wrote a book, Now Everyone Will Know, The Perfect Husband, His Shattering Secret, My Rediscovered Life. Well, sad to have to keep a secret for 25 years.
Such an interesting story. Really, really. And a great book. I mean, real page-turner.
Like, absolutely.
It's a really, really great book. But yeah, really sad. I mean, that she just kind of had to endure that for so long and to go through that. Wow.
And I love that she was so honest about the shame that she experienced and being able to really help our listeners understand how to walk through shame and to not have to hold that secret. So
sure.
Yeah, blessings exactly. to her. She was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, without further ado, we have a very special guest in studio today, which is very cool. Today's guest is Aura Nadrich, a certified life coach, certified mindfulness meditation teacher, and the author of her new book, Says Who? How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. New York Times bestselling author Marianne Williamson says Aura is a treasure. Her voice bears the passion of her own experience. When she speaks, I listen. When she writes, I read it. When she gives advice, I heed it. Aura blogs for the Huffington Post and has been featured as a panelist on Huffington Post Live. She's written many articles on mindfulness and can be found on Yahoo Health, You Beauty, and many other publications. As a former actress and screenwriter, she worked in film, episodic television, and commercials for more than a decade. During that time, she simultaneously embarked on a two-decade psychological and spiritual journey towards self-awareness and transformation, which led her to becoming a life coach. Welcome, Aura.
Hi, Deborah. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. My goodness. Aura is also a licensed marriage officiant.
I saw that. That's so cool. I love
Tell
that.
Us about that a little bit. What is a licensed marriage officiant?
Oh, well, someone who can marry you.
Okay.
So cool.
Yeah.
So it's non-denominational religious-wise.
Absolutely non-denominational.
Right.
Is that something like what they used to say, like a civil... What is it, like a peace civil? What do they call them?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know. I can't think of the name either.
Yes, one of those. Yes. That's what how my mom and dad actually got married. I can't remember the name of them. Anyway, wonderful.
So cool.
Yes, and also, as you listen to the show, if anybody would like to call in, our phone number is 323-203-0815. Okay, well, I'm really curious. How did you come to write Says Who?
Well, the story is this. I was a life coach, a certified life coach, as you mentioned, and I was seeing my clients, and I started to see a pattern with my clients. The original story of Says Who really started with me. It was on my own journey, and it was through a devastating experience in my family that I believed something that wasn't true. So when I became a life coach, I would be talking to my clients, and I started to see these patterns where there was a thought that they held on to that wasn't true, that was dominating their lives. And it was one client in particular who I was with one day, and she was on this very upwardly mobile trajectory of starting a new business. And she's a very creative woman, and she had been successful before, and she was very excited about starting this new business. And she's talking about it when all of a sudden she blurts out that she felt she was going to be destitute and homeless, which was so strange. It was like I was in the presence of someone with two minds. Here was somebody who was really doing something very proactive and positive in their lives, and she had this fear, this very deep-rooted fear that she was not going to be okay. And as I heard her, I thought, you know what? I am convinced that that thought didn't originate with her. Mm-hmm. It was just an instinct that I had. And I said to her, says who? Who said you're going to be homeless and destitute? And that was really how it began, that question.
And that phrase just stuck in your mind. Yeah.
Right.
It's beautiful.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you see the transformation in her? Like she was kind of like, she thought it, of it differently?
She was absolutely stunned.
Yeah.
I mean, it completely just... She had no reference point to that.
Yeah.
She had never asked herself that question.
Right.
Obviously not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she just got very still, very quiet. Her eyes widened. Mm-hmm. And through that question, she was able to connect to where that thought originated, and it did not originate with her.
Right. Yeah.
It's fascinating. I'm curious, were you ever around Gestalt therapy at all? Because I know I was trained in Gestalt, and they call that interjects, things that you swallow whole that people will tell you, and you don't digest them and spit them out or make them your own.
Uh-huh.
And I can just, I mean, I remember so many things from my own growing up and experiences of just these negative, catastrophic thoughts that totally, I can completely relate.
Sure.
Right.
So I have so many questions. Okay, I wanted to go back because in the bio you talked about having sort of this, you know, this psychological experience and, you know, transformation and that kind of thing. So how did that come about? Was there something like in your life or just, you felt like you wanted to change directions, or how did that work?
Well, I always consider myself a seeker. Even as a young girl, I was very curious. I was always very inquisitive. I wanted to know what this is all about. You know, I was sort of a young existentialist. Mm-hmm. I very much was curious about life and the meaning of life. I read poetry and philosophy. So I really was on that road early on, I would say. And as I mentioned earlier, I had a family occurrence that was quite devastating, and that just completely rocked my world. And as a result of that, I embarked on wanting to know deeper answers as to what the thinking mind is about. And I went on a deep, extensive psychospiritual journey as a result of that, which took me to all sorts of fascinating places and experiences.
And were you meditating prior to that or no?
I was. I was a transcendental meditator in the 80s when I was an actress. I sought it out. And in those days, it wasn't nearly as popular or mainstream as it is today. Yeah. I didn't know anybody that was meditating. And again, my intuition was that I knew I needed time to get quiet. And because the demands of being an actress were very in the external world and a lot of like running and going and auditions and whatnot, and it was stressful. I knew that meditation would be something that could be very helpful to me, which it was. So I sought out TM and I became a meditator.
It's great.
Kelly's an avid meditator, and I vowed that this year I'm going to start doing it more formally. Although I did see your Huntington post.
My Huffington Post?
Yeah, where you were talking about you can meditate with your coffee. And
I wrote a blog for Huffington Post called Your Morning Cup of Tea or Coffee Can Be Your Meditation. And I wrote that because I really wanted people to know, even today as a mindfulness meditation teacher, and yes, it's more mainstream today than ever, but people are still intimidated by meditation.
For sure.
They feel they have to have gone to India to meditate, or that perhaps they're not doing it right. So there's a lot of that, and I wanted to lift the sort of expectation, the pressure of meditation, and say you could turn anything into a meditation. You could take your morning cup of tea or coffee, something that we each do, you know, daily, or you know, anything. It doesn't have to be tea or coffee. It could be water or juice, and you can sit quietly with that drink, and you can literally focus on it and focus on your breath and be present. I'm also a mindfulness teacher, and that's about being in the present moment with total awareness. So when I started to present that to people, that you don't have to sit in the lotus position and chant, that you can actually turn something into a meditation, suddenly more people felt, oh, I can do that. That's not so intimidating. I can try that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. When I look back at some of the activities I did in my life, they have some sort of meditative quality because I used to run a lot. And I know running is not sitting quietly, but I was running quietly. And that was a way that I could actually quiet my mind so that I would have just sort of this mellow focus on the nature around me. So I think that would qualify as a form.
I do, because I think like if you look at Thich Nhat Hanh, the meditation teacher, and he really speaks a lot about walking meditation. And so running, walking, what's the difference really? You know, one's
pace.
Faster, one's slow. But if you are in present time with the very thing that you're doing, you can turn that into a meditation. It can become contemplative. It can become relaxing. It can quiet the mind. So really, again, anything can be turned into a meditation.
I think my kitties are good meditation teachers because when I cuddle up with them and just pet them, that always feels so calming and sweet.
Animals are always in the present. That's why.
Animals are a great way to be in the present moment. As a matter of fact, my cat was lying on my bed recently and I went into my bedroom to get something and I was so taken by how sweet he looked all curled up on my bed that I went over and lay down on the bed with him and I just surrendered to being with my cat and then I forgot what I came into the room for.
Of course.
So nice to have that moment to not be able to just do
to take those moments just to be present, you know.
I know in the beginning of your book I was reading the introduction and I know you share about what that family thing was. Are you comfortable saying
Absolutely.
That on air?
Sure.
About your sister and
definitely.
Can you share a little bit about that?
My sister had a nervous breakdown when I was 14 years old, and it was just absolutely devastating for all of us, for the family, and it was very traumatic for me. I mean, I think it was traumatic for all of us, but I experienced a deep trauma as a result of it, which is part of what Says Who is about. As I said earlier, is that because I was so frightened by what happened to her, and I went into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And when you go into fight or flight, obviously you're in a deep fear state, and a lot of thoughts rush to the foreground of your mind, which is what happened to me. And that's when that thought was born, that I felt that that could happen to me. That what happened to her was going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. And that was the thought that I believed was true, and it wasn't true. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that until many years later.
Sure. Didn't connect them. Yeah.
Right. Very frightening for a child to
experience that.
And hold on to something like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. It was very traumatic.
And it must have directed a lot of your other thinking, right? Like one thought leads to another thought leads to another thought.
Yeah, well, that thought, once it's born in your mind, it stays there unless you deal with it and work through it. And, you know, I think that whole cognitive work is to where that thought comes from and is it real or not. I didn't process that thought that way. So really what I did is I buried the thought. And as a result, I was living the symptoms that were related to that thought, which was anxiety and fear. I was functioning on the surface. It looked like I was functioning just fine, but there was always a low-level, you know, energy of fear that I was living with as a result of believing this thought that was not true.
Right. And did she get better over time? And even still, it was still there.
She had quite the journey. You know, it was a very difficult road that she was on, you know, and continued to be on for quite some time. So, you know, we were all very much a part of that with her in hopes that she would get better.
Right.
So, you know, it was very difficult.
And are you still close now? Or?
Oh, yeah. We're a very close family.
Yeah, that's nice.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's nice.
So what is the says who method?
You want me to give the method away?
Not all of it, but a little snippets.
You want me to give away the secret sauce?
A little bit.
What is the says who method? The says who method are 7 questions that I've created for basically challenging and questioning and looking at your thought. A fear or a negative or fear-based thought when it comes up. And through questioning it, you can find out really what it wants from you and if it's real or not. If you don't question a thought that you have that's negative or fear-based, then you're very quick to believe it. Mm-hmm. So I've created these 7 questions so that you can transform a negative or fear-based thought, a thought that isn't working for you, it doesn't support your well-being, and replace it with a thought that does.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, can you give us an example of sort of how that would look? Like, let's say you have the negative thought of, I'm not good enough or something.
Right. Well, we think what statistics say, we think between 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day. Mm-hmm. It's quite a lot of thoughts. And a lot of those thoughts don't serve our well-being. And we accept a lot of the thoughts that don't serve our well-being. So what the says who method does, it will question a thought that says, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, by just questioning and saying, well, who is saying that thought in my mind? Says who is that question?
Right.
Is that a thought that I'm telling myself or is it a thought that someone else has told me and I'm believing it is true? So, again, unless you probe and question and challenge a negative thought that you've created in your own mind and allow to remain in your own mind, it's just going to stay there until you decide you don't want to keep it there anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, as you're talking, I'm thinking of all the negative thoughts that I've endured in my life that have caused me shame and, you know, feeling guilty about just being on this planet. Yeah.
It's absolutely.
Terrible, terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the, you know, I wrote Says Who. It isn't about let's just think positive thoughts and positive thoughts will still keep happening and positive things will keep happening in our lives. Although I subscribe to that and that's great. That's not necessarily the case. We invariably, it's part of our thought process. We're going to think negative things. They're going to come in to our minds. It's what you do with a thought that comes up, that you actually can transform it.
Right, whether you give it power and turn it into a more disastrous thought or whether you actually nip it in the bud and and replace it with something that's probably more true, right? I agree with you. I think that just total, when people say, well, just switch out a negative thought with a positive affirmation. And sometimes they're so extreme that it's like, I don't think if I told my clients, you know, you're more than good enough. You're the best. You know how some people would say.
Affirmations are great. I think they're wonderful. It's a great way to start your day. But like, for example, one question of Says Who, I'll give you one of the questions. And I've worked this out a lot with my clients. And I remember even one night in my women's group, there was a woman that was really spinning out on her negative story. She was kind of like what I talk about in the book as being on a hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. You just like going over the same thing over and over again in your mind. And I said, I asked her one of the questions. I said, do you like that thought? Mm. Mm. And it stopped her in her tracks. And she said, no. No, I actually don't like that thought. And I go, okay, so you're thinking a thought that you don't like. Mm-hmm. Why would you think a thought that you don't like? I mean, right. You know, I also speak in the book about using the analogy of if a trespasser came onto your property, you wouldn't just say, hey, come on in and help yourself to whatever you want. Those thoughts are like trespassers in our mind.
Right.
Wouldn't we say, I can tell that thought that I don't want it to stay in my mind anymore, that I really want to let it go.
Right.
And you can. I mean, it sounds simplistic, but it really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. It's sort of like cleaning out your closet, and you don't look and keep the things that you don't like. You usually pick the things that you haven't worn in a couple years, or they're just taking up space, or that don't fit anymore.
Sure.
And those are the ones that sometimes you throw away. You don't even give them away because you say, I don't want anybody to wear this schmata. Get rid of it.
Right. So there's logic in this. You know, why hold on to a piece of clothing that you don't want to wear and don't like? Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, you would think logically you'd want to give it away. Or why would you, hold on to a thought that you don't like? Mm-hmm. That you can actually let go of.
So if people who are like kind of like ruminators, the thought, you know, like they can kind of dismiss it, but then it comes back. Is it just applying the method over and over again?
It is. And another thing that I talk about in the book is I say, be the observer, not the reactor, which again is very connected to mindfulness, being in present time, being aware.
Yes.
So with that awareness, when you're in present time awareness and you're the observer, like you're outside of yourself witnessing yourself.
Right.
And if a negative thought comes up, be with it. You know, it's also in meditation, people think, oh, I can't stop my thinking mind. Mm-hmm. Allow those thoughts to be. Mm-hmm. Allow them to come up. The more you try to shove them down or push them away, they'll stick around even longer. Right. So with a negative thought, yes, that will come up. I say be the observer of that thought. Mm-hmm. And by being the observer, you're not going to be so quick to react to it. And when you're the observer of it, then you can ask it those seven questions.
Right.
Do you know?
Sure. So like less judgment.
Less judgment. Yeah. You're with your awareness, acceptance of that you have this thought and you're not beating yourself and berating yourself for having this negative thought because that just, you know, accentuates even more negativity. Mm-hmm. So it's a process and it's a discipline and it's a practice. It's like anything else. We exercise, we watch what we eat, but yet we allow for these negative thoughts to wreak havoc in our minds. That's a discipline, like anything else.
That's a good point.
It's a daily practice.
Yeah, see that.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and therapist Kelly, and we have here in studio today Aura Nadrich, the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever, and she's sharing her wisdom and her experience about getting rid of those damn negative thoughts.
I know, exactly.
We could have a toss the negative thought party.
I think what's really nice about this is that it's so relatable because I don't know anybody who doesn't have negative thoughts or that they feel like it kind of feels like it overtakes you. So I think this is, you know, really relatable to everybody, which is really nice.
It is. It's very, you know, it's very straightforward. It's very user friendly, if you will. I mean, I think anybody, any age can use this.
Right.
Kids could use this. It really applies. I write in my book a part about bullying because, you know, you think about it, you're on the playground or wherever. I mean, bullying is a huge problem.
Right.
And so what is that really? That's somebody telling you who and what you are. Mm. If kids can learn how to say, wait a minute, no, I'm not that.
Right.
Or no, I don't have to believe what you're telling me about myself. It's usable in that way. It's very
so
effective.
True.
You know,
it's interesting because we're taught sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me.
Right.
And it is such a crock because it's the words that people say to us that define our self-identity that can be so painful.
Right.
Oh, I can remember a handful of things that people would have said to me on the play yard. You know, I just even remember remember that guy I told you about when I was playing kickball?
Yes.
And that guy from, oh my God, I was in sixth grade and I outran the guy in sixth grade and I saw him like 40 years 30 years later, and I asked him about this. Did he remember this moment in time where he picked up the ball and he threw it at my chest and knocked the wind out of me and basically told me that I was bad and I was lousy and all this stuff. And I wanted to play with the boys, you know, and he really made me feel like I wasn't allowed to beat boys or play sports and not be punished. And he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. he was a psychiatrist at this point. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're not going to give me my moment in time where I can have the healing from you? Nah, didn't happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the nice thing
is, it's like, I feel like we have a lot of insight today with our kids. Like, for example, today, my son, he got new shoes and he didn't really want to go to school today. But I'm like, but look, you know, the great news is you get to wear your new shoes and you're all excited. And I said, you could show, you know, your best friend. He really loves this little boy. And he's like, well, what if he doesn't like them?
Oh.
And I said, well, do you like them? And he said, yeah. And I said, that's all that matters. Doesn't matter what everybody else thinks if you like them, you know? But I think that the nice thing is with parents today, we're a little bit more conscientious about sort of, you know, instilling this idea in kids that it's like, it doesn't matter so much about so-and-so.
Right.
You know, but I love that questioning because it's true. It's like, we need to kind of, you know, drill that in.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
I love the title of your book because it is Says Who. It is one simple question can change.
Yeah, Says Who. And I love it. So many people say back to me, like, Says Who?
Oh, really?
And the kids are saying it now. And it's great because I really want children to be able to go to a kid who maybe doesn't like your son's shoes, that he could say, you know, or, you know, whatever he ends up saying or not saying, that they have some kind of arsenal. They have like a toolbox that they can refer to something and say, you know, we don't say sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt. But we could say Says Who.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, and whose opinion really matters.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Who are you to tell me who I am?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. I would love to have a 5-year-old say that to their parents, you know, on a regular basis. Yes. I don't care what you think, Mom. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. For you will not let your children listen to this.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, eat your vegetables. Says Who.
Says Who.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. You know they're thinking it, maybe if they don't even say it.
So you write about the difference between automatic, judgmental, and something to worry about thoughts. Can you just say a little bit about each one?
Well, automatic thoughts are the thoughts that pop into our heads, you know, without premeditating. You know, they're the ones that throw us off guard. And a perfect example of that is when you're in the car and somebody cuts you off or does something else, you know, and your automatic thought is, what an idiot. Do you know, it's like quick, you're so quick to like blurt that out in your mind.
You're so kind. That's all you think?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm not going to say it on
You can say anything
show.
You want on this show. Okay.
So, you know, those kinds of automatic thoughts, which again, being the observer, you know, once you start to really observe your own mind and the tendencies that you have to blurt something out, to have an automatic thought that is negative, you come onto it, you become aware of it. So really what I propose is be aware of those automatic thoughts. Road rage is because of an automatic thought gone
absolutely
amok, you know. That's really what it is.
It's turning the thought into action.
It's the automatic thought that takes you over and you have to act on it. So that's the automatic thoughts, and I think those are great thoughts to work with, so that again you're not at the effect of an automatic thought that's negative. And judgmental thoughts, well, don't we have those, you know? I mean, I speak about that in the book, about you can walk into a party and in a minute have a judgmental thought about somebody based on the way they look, the way they're wearing their hair, the sound of their voice, you know? And again, I'm really proposing with Says Who is to really observe the thoughts of our mind, those that are judgmental, those that are automatic, the something to worry about thoughts. Another thing I think we can all relate to. Do you know, it's like if your mind isn't worrying for a while, you know, somebody said to me recently, God, I haven't worried for a couple of hours. What's wrong?
Now they're worrying about that.
Right. So this is a way of, I think, retraining the mind. Do you know that things, the way we think that we're so used to, and again, we are so quick to accept, that we can actually change that out.
Right.
You know, we can update our thinking process. You know, we update our computers. I think we need to update our minds a little bit more.
I like that.
I sure wish we could get this book in the hands of people who are prejudiced and racist and all that, because that's where all that action starts from.
I was thinking that. Automatic thoughts. Because it's like, you can't be a secure person if you're going to, like, you know, be mean or judgmental to somebody else, because you're obviously not happy. And, you know, so I think about people who are, you know, racist and things, they're just not happy with themselves.
And that's learned, you know, a lot of that is learned behavior. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, will we ever know who the original says who was when racism, you know, started long ago, and hatred and prejudice? But that is something that lives in all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to really, I also talk about in the book, owning your thoughts, mm-hmm. and really owning all of them, not just the nice thoughts, the not so nice thoughts, and the judgmental thoughts, and the thoughts that might have, you know, shades of racism and prejudice and hate, you know, to really look at that in yourself and not to perpetuate that. It's all thought-based. It started somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that is really important for people to understand, that it's not to judge oneself because one has these judgmental thoughts, but to pay attention to what those are so you don't give them power and act on them unconsciously in a way that can be really destructive. Because I know that's what happens to so many people, is that they have a negative thought that they are so ashamed of having, that they think that there's something wrong with them as a human being because they had that thought. Look at all of us think horrible things about people at times.
And I talk about that in the book, and I also, it's in the workbook. I mean, I list a lot of thoughts. I give the reader every possibility of what could have come through your mind, and just, you know, sort of the garden variety of negative thoughts and nasty thoughts and not nice thoughts. And it, you know, I say in the book, don't judge yourself for having those thoughts. Work through those thoughts. Transform those thoughts. Take them higher. Do you know, we all have the ability to do that if we want to.
Absolutely. You know, EMDR, do you know what EMDR is? Eye movement desensitization reprocessing. It's a trauma-based therapy that I'm trained in. And the interesting component to it that is what it's about is it's changing the negative thought that's associated with the trauma. It's, you can't change the memory. You can't change what actually happened. Right. But what happens with people with trauma is they are attached to a negative thought about themselves in that event. Like, you watch somebody, your best friend, die in a car accident that you were driving the car. And you say, I am responsible for this person's death, or I am bad because my friend died, or I am bad for living. That's the negative thought.
Right.
And the whole process is really geared toward repairing now a positive cognition or a neutral cognition thought with the event, so that it doesn't cause all of that anxiety.
That's a very powerful tapping tool. Right? Or is that emotional freedom technique?
That's that one. Yeah.
Okay,
eye movement is alternating stimulation to two sides of the brain, so it loosens up the trauma, like emotional cellulite, and softens it so that people can move through it more quickly. But it's really interesting, because when they really teach you the method, it's all about finding that person's negative cognition. And so you actually have to hand them a list of like 50 different things that they're close enough to what they're still thinking. And most people will say, I don't even know what I'm thinking about that. I don't even know that. But that's what's keeping the trauma alive, because, so it's fascinating.
So a lot of the times, and I also talk about in the book, that sometimes you can feel an emotion and I say the thought creates the behavior. Do you know, it creates, they're all connected.
Yeah.
And you can feel an emotion and not even know what that's connected to.
Yes.
But again, by being with it and by being the observer and not being the reactor, it will connect you to that thought.
Absolutely.
If you allow for it to come forward.
Yeah, and sometimes people don't understand how intimately connected the thoughts and emotions are, because it's your thought that is feeding those feelings. If you're feeling bad about yourself today, it's probably because you're saying terrible things to yourself.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. What's your biggest negative thought that you've had in your life?
I have a lot. You know, for me, it's most, I have a lot of guilt. Like, remember, like today, for example, I mean, you know, like just with my kids, like, am I doing enough for them? Like, that's kind of my, I don't know if that just comes
with
a... But
is that a negative? But you're not saying, am I doing enough for them? I'm a bad mom. That would be the thought that would continue.
Okay, so it's more negative. Let's see. Gosh, I have to think about like what the one...
And that's where it can go awry.
Yes, exactly.
Am I doing enough? Maybe I'm not spending enough time with my kids. ... I'm a bad mom.
Right.
That's where we get into trouble.
Exactly. Like the ultimate. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because I think it's good to question ourselves sometimes.
Sure.
Right. Because we want to be better. We want to be better.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us, I want to be better if I can.
Exactly.
You know, but it's exactly what Aura's saying is that it's not that you're a bad mom. You don't feel that way.
No.
No. Because you're not.
No.
Not, any,
yeah.
not at
think
all.
So. Yeah.
But I think it's the negative thoughts that stick around that we, you know, mm-hmm. I work with a lot of my clients and there's usually, you know, you asking Kelly, like, is there one thought that maybe we've held on to for a long time that's sort of stuck around and hasn't gone away?
Right.
I got one.
What's yours?
I got one. I remember my mom, it was a long time ago. You know, she was a very anxious person. Uh-huh. So she really needed, you know, if you picked up a glass of water and you put it down and you went to the bathroom, you came back, that water cup was put away. It was washed, put away. And she would be like doing this with her arms, you know, folding it. You must put your cup in. You know, it's just a lot of anxiety and all that kind of stuff. Well, I didn't know that it was anxiety then. I just thought that she was always angry with me.
Yeah.
And one time she called me lazy. Now, I don't know about you, but you know me pretty well. I don't think that that is a word that you could ever attach to me. But I believed it forever. And I swear I would spend so much time, like if I would sit on the couch for like 3 minutes, I'm like, oh, I'm lazy. I have to get up. So it never, like talk about this, like not meditating, like meditation.
Yeah.
Who has time to meditate? How are you allowed to? You must be lazy if you sit around and meditate. Everything bled into that thing. Now, to some degree, I will say yay, because it did cause me to be an overachiever and have a lot of accomplishments. But boy, the incapacity to just sit and chill and relax, terrible. So I've been working on that one for years.
That is such a great example, Deborah, because I also say in the book, things that were told to us as children, you're lazy, you're absent-minded, you're stupid. How many people grew up being told they were stupid?
Oh,
Do you know? You're sloppy, you're this, you're that, that you carry it into adulthood.
Yes.
And you may not be any of those things.
Absolutely.
As an adult.
Yeah. Oh, and that reminds me when you're saying that, that's such a good example too, that's a lot of parents will say, oh, that's stupid or that's ridiculous. They're not saying that to the child that you're stupid, but the child hears, I'm the one who said that. They said that's stupid. That means I'm stupid.
Right, absolutely.
You're so right.
Yeah, being told you're stupid. I had a client that was extremely bright and very accomplished and a published author of many books and grew up being told he was stupid. You know, by a parent, and it took him many, many years and a lot of therapy to work through that one.
What's so interesting how so much of all of this is shaped in our childhood. I remember I was in an advanced math class in sixth grade, and it was just too hard for me. It was just way too advanced, and I got so like flustered because I couldn't do it. And then it was just sort of this joke in my family, like, Kelly's not great at math, you know? And it was like, it never felt like, no, it's not that I'm not good at math. It was just that particular class was just too hard for me. But now I still have that feeling like, oh, I'm not good at math, you know? And it's kind of funny how those thoughts just stay with you.
But this, I would think, or I want your opinion on this, is that there are some things that we may not be good at. I'm not saying that was you of math, but I like it now in my life. I'm able to, without shame or feeling bad about myself, say, I'm just not that good at that. Now, that's kind of a negative thought.
Well, but I also talk about that in the book because I say it's not, I said, we're all good at some things and not good at other things, but it's the thoughts that we tell ourselves about what we think we're not good at that does the damage and the most harm.
Okay.
Like we say, like, okay, if somebody who's not a good cook, so that they may say, hey, you know what, I'm just not a good cook. That can really escalate into, I'm not a good cook, I'm never going to make my husband happy, I'm a loser. Mm-hmm. It's like all the things that we continue to tell ourselves around something that we may not be so great at. It's not bad to not be great at everything.
Yeah.
Right.
It's but what we tell ourselves.
Right. Turning that into a shame-based self-attack.
Or not being great at math.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it doesn't make you stupid, it doesn't make you whatever. You might not be great at math, so what?
Yes.
Is that
so
terrible?
Exactly. Yeah. I love this. This is so
fascinating. You know,
so
it's amazing the things that we tell ourselves. I am always amazed at what people reveal to me, and we can all relate to. We could sit here and spend the whole afternoon about things that we remember that were either told to us or that we tell ourselves. But sometimes we just throw it away, and we're not necessarily a negative person, but we continue to say these negative things to ourselves. You can be hanging out with a girlfriend, and all of a sudden she'll say, oh, God, I'm so stupid.
Yep.
I'm such an
idiot. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, I mean, idiot and stupid. How often do we hear that?
All the time.
Oh, and the I'm fat. Yes, oh my gosh. I think every single woman I've ever encountered on the planet has, I've heard say the words, oh, I'm so fat today. Yes. I'm so fat. I'm fat.
I know.
You know what? And I really feel like that's code for I'm just not feeling secure today. You know, it's like, I don't even know if it's like a physical thing. I think it's really like, I'm just not feeling good enough today. Like, I think that's the code.
I have a new one. I'm going to just wake up every day and go, I'm just too thin today.
Yes.
I'm just too thin today. I'm just too pretty today.
What's that song? I'm too sexy for,
myself.
Exactly. Yes,
yes. Wake up saying that.
Damn, I'm just too pretty today.
But I'll just say it's like a gender thing.
Why not?
Right. You know? Well, I just feel like men are not saying the same things women are. I just don't in their head.
But I'm sure they're saying plenty of negative and berating things to themselves related to being competitive, to excelling, to all the things that they say. I think the vanity, not that men aren't or can't be as vain as women, but we really beat ourselves up and berate ourselves so much about the way we look.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, and fat is a perfect example of that.
Yes.
Is that, you know, why aren't we more accepting of how we look? Do you know, we're terribly critical of how we look.
Terribly.
Right. And it's also, you know, what you're saying too. It's the part that comes after that. Because what if, you know, if somebody might be overweight, somebody might be, you know, 350 pounds and they might be fat and need to take a look at that and lose weight. But it's not that you're a bad person or that you're a glutton or that you're this or you're that.
It's what you think of yourself. This story really has stayed with me for quite some time. I had a friend of mine who had a manicurist many years ago and she was extremely overweight. And my girlfriend said to me, she is so confident and so happy. She goes, God, that really bugs me. She's way more confident and happier than I am. And she's overweight. And she was accepting. It was like she was not beating herself up for being overweight. She actually had self-love and was overweight. Mm-hmm. So it's really what you tell yourselves, whether you're thin or you're overweight.
It's so true.
Do you know that self-love is no matter what you look like. Exactly. You either have it or you don't.
Yes.
Thin or overweight.
Such a good point.
I always tell my clients when they say, okay, I'll do that when. And the when is usually when I've lost 5 pounds or when I've done this or when I've done that. As long as you're waiting for that, you're only going to allow yourself to live when you've done whatever, your body, your mind, every aspect of you is going to rebel against that because you're telling yourself, I'm not acceptable as who I am. Yeah.
Right.
And therefore, why would your body want to cooperate and drop those 5 pounds?
Exactly.
It's going to punish you.
Yes.
You know, when you say, I'm going to put on that bathing suit and I'm going to go swimming and I'm going to love myself, then you know what? The 5 pounds may just drop off automatically.
Right. Well, it's also, I do talk about that in the book as well, because I say we can hold two conflicting thoughts that cancel each other out or sentences in our mind. Mm-hmm. I really want to lose weight, but I'm so horrible at dieting. I'm always going to be fat. Do you know? You know, we
sabotage.
Really,
complete
sabotage. A desire which is to lose weight. So we beat ourselves up continuously with, and that's why I think a lot of people can't successfully lose weight.
Right.
You know, to say to yourself, I'm overweight and I'm going to really make an effort to lose some pounds, you know, and love yourself in the process.
Sure. That's the part that often gets left behind.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this goes so fast.
I know.
The last couple minutes. So tell us what we haven't asked you that you really want people to know about the book.
Well, it's out.
It's out.
I think it's great. Says Who works. I use it on myself, and I can tell you that it works. It's a method that if you stick to it and you stay disciplined and you really question those thoughts that want to bring you down and make you feel bad and diminish you, if you use the Says Who method, it will work. You will be in control of your thoughts. Your thoughts will not be controlling you.
That's beautiful.
I say, let your thoughts serve you. You don't need to serve your thoughts.
And then since you are a mindfulness and meditation teacher, can you give our listeners maybe a 2-minute synopsis about somebody who's not used to meditating, they don't know what to do, how do they even just start that process?
Okay, what I say is, let's take meditation, the word meditation, out of the equation. And can you find 5 or 10 minutes in your day to sit quietly somewhere? Even if you're working, go into your car, go into the bathroom, I don't care where it is, and just sit, close your eyes, take a deep breath in and out.
We're all doing it.
Yeah, we're doing it.
And give yourself permission to just be in the moment. Just allow yourself to be present in the moment that you're in. And that is how meditation begins. And let that moment grow into another moment. But start with 5 minutes a day to give yourself permission to just be. It's not in the doing, it's in the being.
You should do tapes and recordings.
Are you doing those?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing
that. It's great because you have a nice soothing voice. It's really nice.
Thank you. Yeah.
Where can people get the book? And even though we have an international audience, please tell them about some upcoming events that you have, book signings and such.
You can get my book. You can order it on all the book outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, they're at your local bookstores. I am going to, for those that missed my book signing at Barnes & Noble on the Promenade in Santa Monica, I'm doing one this Thursday at the Mystic Journey Bookstore in Venice. I'm also going to be at the Conscious Life Expo at the LAX Hilton.
When is that? Oh, yeah.
February 19th to the 21st.
Okay.
And I'm going to be, you can get my book there. I'm going to be doing a lecture and a workshop. And I'm also going to be at the Mystic Journey bookstore booth as well and doing book signing there. So if you check the catalog, it'll give you all that information. I'm going to be at booth 235, I think.
Okay. Okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Your personal website again?
AuraNadridge.com.
Okay. Perfect.
And all my social media handle is my name.
Great.
Aura Instagram. Is ORANAD as in dog, RICH.com. Aura Nadridge, the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. And it's a beautiful picture of you on the cover.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, tell us quickly, too. We do have one more minute. How do you know Marianne Williamson?
Marianne, well, she's amazing. And she ran for Congress, for those of you that don't know that. And I hosted her as I thought she would make an amazing congresswoman. She's just so awesome. And we met during that time, even though we have mutual friends and our past kind of sort of intersected in different ways, but we met really when she was running for Congress.
Oh.
And she was amazing, and she loved my book and endorsed it, obviously.
Yeah.
And she's a dear friend.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you so much for being such a great guest.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay. This segment of our show has been sponsored by Kim Gold, the author of the business memoir Gold Standard, How to Rock the World and Run an Empire. She's such a delight. She's so great.
We love her.
Kim
Gold. So grounded.
She's awesome. And what a gorgeous house.
I know.
Beautiful. Yeah. She's got a great sense of design and all that, too. So thank you. We really appreciate your support, Kim. That's great.
Yes.
And Aura Nadridge has been our guest today. She's awesome. It was a great show. So what have we got next week?
So next week we have Marlon Young. He is the author of the Audible book. It's called The Last Dinosaur, An Every Man's Guide to the New Woman. So it's really, really fascinating. Talks about a little bit what we talked about today with genders, men, women. And it'll be really fun. He's a funny guy, and it's going to be really entertaining.
You are going to come back a new woman after this weekend. Isn't that so?
Oh, God. I'm a little nervous. I'm going a little girl's weekend. I'm going to suspend my mom duties, suspend my therapy duties, and just have a good time. So
are we
going
to see crazy Instagram pictures of you?
Hopefully not. No.
Dancing on bars and shooting shots?
I don't think so. Probably like with me. Like, probably my friends are going to be taking me sleeping at like 9 o'clock and while they're going out. So
there are some famous bars down there, on this one strip. One street.
Well.
Yeah, that little strip of bars, I think, that they're quite known for.
I don't think that's going to be me. Maybe them. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
Aura. And thanks.
Yeah, and make sure you visit our website, docandtherapist.com, docandtherapist.com. And we look forward to you tuning in to us again next week.
See you then.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.